Okay, today is December 17th, 2018, and I'm happy to look at the wonderful faces in front of me. And again, a big hello to the submarines or the sub students who are listening, and I appreciate all your kind words. As I've said before, I don't take it for granted. You shouldn't think I was born with a golden spoon in my mouth. In my first rabbinate, Haini Modela Kaddish Baruch Hu, that it didn't destroy me, plain and simple. The second rabbinate was a different story. Coming in Aliyah was not easy at the time. There were no Anglos here. There was no support system. There was no Nefesh B'Nefesh. You came into the Mediterranean of Israel, and either you swam or you sunk. And many decisions had to be made along the way, and Baruch Hashem, the Ribbono Shel Olam, guided me. With that being said, again, I refer to yesterday. Very sad, I dedicated yesterday's shir in memory of Naomi HaKohen Weiss. I dedicate today's shir. She was just a wonderful, wonderful student. You can't imagine the Hakarat HaTov, the Yirat HaKavod, the love of Rabbanim, of Talmidei Dei Chachamim. All right, the children should go on her path. Three of her children are married. And North Miami Beach, she was my student, Machon Gold, I would say late 70s. I taught her brother a little earlier in BMT, and I taught her youngest sister, who was very different than Naomi. I remember one time they announced the girls are not allowed to go out of the school January time, and they didn't want them running around. And I remember Yael disappeared. I think she was skiing with her parents in Switzerland. It was brings back many memories. But the Lebendicke Dafkein Weiter, and that's a basic rule of life. I want to mention Nachum Lem. I picked it up. You shouldn't think. I always look at Olam Katan. They give out a lot of freebies. Friday, when you go to shul, you can get enough freebies to keep you busy for weeks. Some of it is very fascinating. So I have a system. I don't read every article, but at least I see what's going on. And particularly Olam Katan, because my grandchildren read it, I want to be able to respond. And I always look at the Shaila Teshuva. So when I've been quoted, I don't know if the convex is for them, but the Shaila Teshuva, I might have to, they will ask me the same, Saba, what do you say? So I've been quoted, if over the years in the Shaila Teshuva, I've been quoted by Rav Abinezer, his secretary writes it, and he's an American, he listens to the Shayurim, he's a sub-student, so he quotes me occasionally. But anyway, they quote the Rav, and Rav Heschel quotes this, I heard it, there are variations, but the way I understand it is a Balabas, one of the Rav's Balabatim, bought an apartment in Israel. And he says to the Rav, Rebbe, I now have an apartment, I visit Israel occasionally, one day I hope to live there. What do I do Yontif Sheni? Meaning, I finished this question too. He doesn't want to observe Yontif Sheni, even though he's still in Tinek, let's say. So the Rav told him, the only difference between before and now is since you bought an apartment, you have to pay taxes in Jerusalem. Outside of that, Yontif Sheni remains the same. So I had a kick out of it. Also, I want to mention something that I stated many years ago, when we spoke about Rabbi Yaakov Yosef, so I made the point that when they were looking for a chief rabbi of New York, they finally settled in the late 1870s on the Malbim. And the Malbim, Ein Mazal Yisrael, he started out, he was journeying to go to the boat to sail, and 1879, and he died on the way. He never left Europe, he never reached New York, and then there was a lull and a big machloket, and it took a number of years until they finally chose Rabbi Yaakov Yosef. Anyway, I was sent at Bar Ilan University. The office of the campus rabbi wrote about the Malbim, and I don't know whether this is his own research or others, and he says he was offered the new post of general rabbi of New York, but declined it. And really, he was traveling in Russia. he was elected to Kremenchug as the rabbi in White Russia in Kremenchug, and on the way there he fell ill and died. I don't know who's correct. What I said, what I quoted to you, was from the research done in America. There was a conservative rabbi, it was a Shlomo Mitzvot, but in the conservative shul, was a graduate of JPS, Kopp, Avram Kopp, Rabbi Kopp, and in Rochester, he did the original research on the RJJ, and I'm quoting him. But I just, for the sake of accuracy, I mention what the person at Bar Ilan said, and I can't give an opinion. It's not my area of specialty or where I've done the basic research. Yes, Yoma, what did you want to say? How do you have an opinion? You were in Russia at the time.
No, but the Malvin died in Kiev.
That's fine. Leave it stand. Okay. Now, I want to come back. I want to do one more Sheyura on the Var Hatzalah, and I want to deal with the situation and open it up to you and take you there and let you feel it and let's understand it a little deeper. And some of the comments that I've made, you'll see where I'm coming from and you can judge yourself whether my understanding is correct or not. There's no question that the Var Hatzalah functions in two different periods. In one period, it's to try to save as many as you can, and reaches an apex with the March on Washington. And that march has attracted a lot of attention. I don't know if you realize there's a website and Wyman Papers, and there's a lot of material. Part of the list of the rabbis is cut off. I now have come up with the list of all the rabbis from New York who participated. But at the out-of-town rabbis, it's cut off in the middle, and no one seems to have the whole list, so that the name of Rabbi Soloveitchik is not there. It's cut off before the S's. But be it as it may, I can tell you positively that the Moriu Rebbe participated, and the march, even though it was viewed as a failure, resulted in saving thousands of Jews. Ultimately, there were friends, there were senators, there were people who cared. A committee was formed. They did something. I was also told that lately lectures have been given that I shouldn't maledict and curse FDR's memory. He was under pressure, and his own Jewish advisors, as I said, his own speechwriter, Roseman, told him, these Jews are Jews you don't want to associate with, you'd be ashamed to be seen with them. And like the President of the United States today, our dear friend President Donald Trump, says, I quote, "I don't understand the Jewish people. I do so much for them and they still don't vote for me." And he's absolutely right. How can he understand a non-religious Jew, a Jew who has no Shabbat, Kashrut, Parash Machachal, he has no Judaism. His values are with a liberal American without belief in Jesus. That's what he amounts to. No more and no less. And if you don't believe me, read the Pew Report. Okay. So we have to be perhaps a little bit more understanding of FDR. As hard as it is for me to shift gears, and the Torah brought out to him where I participated as a kid of 7, 8 years old in 1944. I remember it like yesterday. I remember the Erev. It's probably the first time in my life I saw an Erev. They actually built an Erev on Washington Avenue, carried out the Torah. So, but then with the end of the war, we get involved with the Var Hatzalah, reconstruction, rebuilding, helping these poor individuals. And here, you have to put yourself in the place of a survivor. I spoke before about coming in Aliyah. I remember 2 minutes ago, we spoke about Aliyah, what it was like, and yet, as much as Rakefet looks back, and my wife and I look back, and we laugh and cry, and we view the Olim of today, how easy they have it, nefesh b'nefesh, and what we went through. This is one millionth of what a survivor. Imagine you survive, you don't know where your family is, you don't know who's alive, you don't know who's dead. You've gone through all types of inhuman torture. All you've seen is Gestapo and soldiers and death. And here you survived. Some of the people came out of it. They were weighing 40 pounds, 50 pounds, Muslim. God have mercy. And then there's another point I made last week, which I see caused a little consternation, and I stand on it, and I'll just reiterate it and explain myself a little bit better. There's no question that as Jews we have a dual responsibility. We're different than any other religion in the world. You saw it again this weekend when the PLO was fighting with the Hamas in Yehuda Vishomran, and Arab kills Arab, daily in news, daily occurrences, Christian killed Christian. God have mercy, what went on over Alsace-Lorraine. We Jews cannot kill other Jews, at least God have mercy, like Rav Avadia Yosef said. I can never forget this. Maybe some of you who have lived here more than 20 years will remember this. Rav Avadia said, mi mamin she Yehudi Sfadi horeg Yehudi Sfadi, that from the Eidat Mizrach, one Jew kills another Jew. Meisim b'chol yom, you know, with the gangsters. So Rakefet said, Rav Avadia said, that they got the Mizrach when killing another. But in other words, if you killed an Ashkenazi, maybe that's mutter. Maybe that's mutter. I can't believe no, Rav Avadia was my friend, I know that. But it was a slip of the tongue. Maybe he meant to say the Ashkenazim are a shayim. They can talk at times, kill each other. But a Dada Mizrach, but anyhow, ein hachinami, for Jews do not kill Jews. We have a dual responsibility. And I stated something that this is the difference between we who are sitting here in the classroom and the Jews listening in Teaneck. When I look back at my friends 50 years ago, more than 50 years ago, we all had to make a decision. After the Six-Day War, there was no Jew whose heart beat a Torah beat who did not face the question, do you leave America, do you come in Aliyah, do you remain behind? And I say very simply, the Jew in Teaneck also has due responsibility, and he feels it. But what is more important to you, your individual Judaism or your collective Judaism? And I state again, in my humble opinion, those who came in Aliyah, the collective identity weighed out or outweighed the individual identity. And plain and simple. And this goes on and on. Everyone today, the young people, again, I've been teaching Torah 60 years, and I've had students who today are grandfathers, and maybe I have students who are great-grandparents already, and the grandchildren too. Everyone faces, and this kid comes in Aliyah, this kid doesn't come in Aliyah. And I get very difficult questions. People who are here in Israel don't want to go back, but there's a marriage proposal. This is mamish dinei nefashot. And this is the question, what overwhelms you? What is more important? I don't have to go further. I was just there Saturday night by a student and his wife. I asked Malcolm myself, were you afraid, you know, communist Russia? We went in, innocent American so-called children. And of course we were afraid. We were scared out of our wits. So then, of course, the next question is, well, how could you do it? And he told us the story of some American who was approached to work for the Mossad, and not where I worked, in a different department. And they met for some sessions, and they backed out. They saw what's involved. They were scared out of their wits. And we said, yes, we were scared out of our wits, but the chance to help Jews, to help Am Yisrael, how can you say no? Now, after the Holocaust, this came to the forefront, because here you have people who are needed to go and help and change their lives and sacrifice, and there were people who rose to the occasion, and we absolutely have to salute them and give credit. But you can't talk about the hundreds that were involved. I want to focus on one school that had support from Var Hatzalah. It also had local support. One little school, and I want to talk about a few individuals. Now, why have I chose this particular school? And I'll explain what I'm talking about in 2 minutes. The memoir literature. Memoir literature, as I've told you time and again, when I speak about the history of Torah in the United States, particularly the contemporary period, I may be right, I may be wrong, because I have a prejudice. I'm trying to interpret Maria Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. Rabbis Louis Bernstein and David Hollander knew, Dov, they fought for decades over what the Rav really thinks. So, you know, you're trying to interpret, all right? I may be right, I may be wrong. But memoir literature is never wrong, because this is what the person thought. This is his understanding. You may disagree. Maybe you see life differently. But you're talking about an individual who thought a certain way. Now, Ashkacha Pratit here. Yoma, what's troubling you? Go back to Kiev and you'll see I'm right.
Yeah? Rebbe knows that the person who's writing memoir literature is not putting something against them to make other people think that.
When you read memoir literature, go to Bernard Rabbit Graduate School, get yourself a doctorate, and we'll talk further, okay? When I did the research for my work on Rabbi Revel, you should know, first I worked with the archives. You follow me, Charlie? The archives don't lie. I'm looking at archives that were unopened in 50 years. You understand? They were just there, ready to be thrown out in garbage cans. Then I interviewed people. Believe me, when you interview people, you have to have a sense. What are they saying? You're absolutely right. Some of it is nonsense. But I have a sense what I'm going to show you today is absolutely correct. It's what the people went through, what they thought, what they felt. Now, the Hashgacha Pratit here is unbelievable. And I'm picking on a girls' school that was organized in Sweden. And there's two individuals, it's actually more than two. One is a husband and wife, and one is a single guy. One individual we've mentioned before, and it's a very famous name in the history of Torah in modern times in the 20th century, it's Rabbi Shlomo Wolbe. If you recall, I mentioned him. He was born in Germany, he was born in 1914, he died in 2005. In the literature world and everyone in Israel, everyone will recognize the name Rabbi Shlomo Wolbe. He was a very, very famous mashgiach. Now, he was born in Germany in an irreligious home, an assimilated home. It's like an American story. Some of the greatest American rabbis came from assimilated homes. I need not go further than Rabbi Shlomo Riskin and the stories he's written about his parents, his grandparents, the communist influence, etc. And he became Rabbi Shlomo Riskin. And there are many, many similar stories. When I learned with the Rav, the top students essentially were kids from American homes whose fathers barely could read Hebrew, if at all. The top students. There were also survivors who were right up there. Kids who managed to survive the Holocaust. And it was an interesting blend. But Rabbi Shlomo Wolbe, he did not come from a religious background. He was a German kid. He was at university, an outreach organization in Germany. German Orthodoxy, until World War II, was very, very similar to American Orthodoxy in the 40s and 50s and 60s. That there was a sense of being a German citizen. There was a little bit of assimilation. On the other hand, there was dedication, there was outreach. You could have dances in Young Israels in America, and you could have dances in synagogues in Germany. And Charlie, if you don't believe me, because you have a prejudice and you don't want to hear this, your father never told you this, so read Dr. Mordechai Breyer's doctorate on German Orthodoxy. And you'll see it's literally very, very similar. The Rabbanim had to look the other way. Better a boy should meet girl in the synagogue than they should be meeting out in the streets where they could meet non-Jewish girls, shiksas, etc. He wrote the doctorate in Hebrew at Bar Ilan. I bought it in Hebrew. I think I paid the equivalent of the chveis $9. When I went to America, I saw there's a translation in English, Columbia University Press, I believe, was only $50. So I would advise you to brush up on your reading of Hebrew, and you'll be better off for the $9 edition. But it's available in English, yes. The title I don't recall offhand, but Google Professor Mordechai Breuer, you'll get the title. It's I have it at home. I could look it up, but it's not worth the effort.
Breuer, or Breuer?
Breuer. Right. It's Mordechai we spoke of. It's a first cousin to the guy we spoke about yesterday in class with the Aleppo Codex. Okay, so Shlomo Wolbe winds up in Slabodka. He winds up in Europe. Amazing, a German kid. But God should spare me when I'll get to my lectures on East European yeshiva that I'm working on right now, preparing. I have a lot of material, a world of material, but you'll understand what I'm talking about. The Elder Bachram, the top students in Mir, in Slabodka, in Pels, made a living off the dummies like me and Charlie who came in from America and Germany. You follow? They made a living. We hired them. We had a little money. We hired them to teach us. And literally, this is the Elder of Bahrim. They were happy as can be. There were 100 kids here, 30 from America, 40 from Germany. Germany had more than America, actually. 10 from England. There were kids from Ireland, Scotland. Amazing thing. And they made a living. So he became a top Talmud Chacham. And it saved his life. How did it save his life? Because here the Germans are coming in to conquer. He's a Jew. He's finished. So there was one kid in the yeshiva from Stockholm. And this kid, it's from the Lehman family, the famous Marcus Lehman family. And this kid fell in love with Wolbe, and he said to Wolbe, "You got to come back with me to Stockholm. We're leaving Poland. Poland's not safe now, and you'll tutor us in our family." It was a well-to-do family, and he was in Slabodka, and that's how he winds up in Sweden. That's how he winds up in Stockholm. Excuse me, he was in Mir Yeshiva. I shouldn't say Slabodka, he was in Mir. And Mir, he was a Talmud Mufak of Rabbi Yeruchim Levavitz, the Mir Mashkiach, and that's how he winds up in Stockholm. Now, he remains in Sweden, and only in 1946 does he go on Aliyah, and in 46, the Lumshi Yeshiva in Petach Tikva. See, it's hard to understand this today. The yeshiva may exist, but it's nothing with nothing. Lumshi Yeshiva, which was in Petach Tikva, became the feeder school for Panovich. Panovich was built by the Lumshi Yeshiva faculty and the students. This was the Panovich Rosh Yeshiva. His vision already was not a little building, but the mountaintop. And I don't have to tell you what Panovich turned into. We just have to disregard the machloket of today. It's very sad. Endless machloket. It breaks the heart. A Jew like me, it breaks the heart. For my humble opinion, when you learn Gemara, you learn that machloket is beautiful. It's l'shem shemayim. The Gemara, every page is filled with machloket. But everyone intermarried, everyone loved each other and had respect for each other. Who could believe that you throw missiles around in a Beis Medrash at Rosh Yeshiva, let alone at other students? All right, that's a sad story, and that's why I'm proud to say I'm a Mizrahiite, and my world, with all our difference of opinion, we stay together. We realize that which unites us is a million times more important than our few divisions. Okay. So Shlomo Wolbe comes to Israel, and in Israel there is a lady who survived the Holocaust, and she was the daughter of the last great Mashkiach. She was the daughter of Rav Avraham Grzynski, who was the Mashkiach in the Slabodka Yeshiva. Rav Avraham Grzynski, when you talk to the Litvakim, they'll tell you that next to Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, he was the most famous Lithuanian Torah personality murdered in the Holocaust. They were in Kovna, they're actually hiding in Slabatka, they were rounded up, and they were executed, all executed one day, I believe it was in 42, in the fort number 9. You know what I'm talking about, fort number 9? Kovna was surrounded by forts. It's like the pillboxes. When you drive through Jerusalem, do you have it in Rehovot too? Pillboxes from the British Nes Ziona. But here we have all over. Yerushalayim, I have right around the corner from me, a half minute away from my house. So it's like the pillboxes, they had forts that were built to protect the city, medieval times. And they were numbered, 1, 2, 3. Port number 9 was right near a big ravine, and that's where they executed tens and tens and tens of thousands of Jews. And one day they executed both Rav Elchanan Wasserman and Rav Avraham Grushinsky. Now this girl went through the hell of the Holocaust, and she survived, and she ultimately comes to Israel, and they made a shidduch between her and Rav Wolpe, and this shidduch, we'll see in a minute, is very important to us. She just died about a year ago. Rebbetzin, he died a number of years ago, 2005. His wife, I believe the name is Rebbetzin, Rivka Wolpe, died in 2017, if I'm not mistaken. Let's see if we have it here. View, Mr. Approach. Let's see if they give me here. I believe it was 2017. Again, you can check it out online. Now, in addition, and here, this is Rabbi Wolpe, a single kid, winds up in Stockholm. And these years where he worked so hard for Vat Hatzalah, he testified, I'm quoting from a biography, Rabbi Shlomo attested to the fact that the 8 long years he spent in Stockholm were the most beautiful years of his life. And you have to understand that these were the years of great accomplishment. These were the years where you understood, Bishvili Nivra Olam, the world was made for me, for this time, what I did. I never in life had such fulfillment as these years. And Yitzchak, I asked you a simple question. You look back at your life, you're no youngster, I know your age. Tell me, the weeks you spent in Russia, do they rate as the number one experience of your life? Think about it. What we accomplished, what we did, in motion all the time, fear of the KGB, the floor lady looking at us, right, what she's thinking, what she's doing, and I remember I come back, my suitcase, I was told this in advance, I was briefed, that when you're going to come back to your room, you're going to see your suitcase was searched. It was turned over. And I came back to the room. I had my stationery in there, which I published in Washington, my phony stationery. Rakefit, the wealthy banker. I was impoverished. I was as poor as a church mouse then. And you know what life was like in Israel then. If you made a living on the books, I mean, we're not talking today, it's a different ballpark. Try to take out 10,000 shekel out of the bank and they'll call the police and have you arrested on the spot. What are you doing with 10,000 cash, etc., etc.? They learned from America. You understand, Charlie, what you told me, I'm still shaking. Tell the class. Charlie went on a plane recently, knew that you have, and when he's ready to board the plane, right at the last, there are IRS people asking him if he has 10,000 in cash with him. Knew, did you have that, Mark? Evidently, his plane, they had a tip. I can tell you, man, Rabbi Holzer once came back to America, and he was Rabbi Holzer, dressed, and he never went without a three-piece suit. They pulled him aside, they stripped him, you don't know what he went through. When they finished with him, he said, why did you do this to me? He said, Rabbi, we have to tell you the truth. We had a tip that drugs are being smuggled in and the description of the person was someone looking like you. You follow? So they had on this plane leaving Newark. Where did you leave from? Leaving Newark. They probably had a tip that there's some Jews there taking, laundering money. Each one has 10,000 in cash on his body, 100,000, who knows what. All right, Hashem Yerachem. Now, there's another Jew and also deserving all the credit in the world. And I knew this name when I was growing up. His books were published, translated into English. Binyamin Zev Jacobson, Jakobson. He too was German. He was born in 1896. He was born in Hamburg. He was Torah im Derech Eretz. Very active on Agudat Yisrael, and became the rabbi in Copenhagen, Denmark. And this was a real German rabbi with a Torah Derech Eretz outlook. He was in Denmark until 1943. When the Germans came in, he ran away, and he ran to Switzerland with his wife. And he and his wife totally, totally dedicated to what we're going to talk about. They too went in Aliyah, living in Israel from 1949 on, living in Jerusalem, was active in Chinuch here. I would say they were still Agudat Yisrael, but very open, very open. He published on the Siddur, he published on the Chumash, on the Haftorah, not the Chumash, on the Haftorah. And there's an English translation. When I was in the rabbinate, I used it for Drushat. Jacobson, you can look it up. You probably have this.
Is he the man Yisachar Jacobson?
No, no, no. This is not Yisachar. This is what I tell you. Binyamin Zev. Binyamin Zev. The name like Binyamin Zev. That's been Binyamin's. That's the person we're talking about. So if it's Yisachar, then that may be his Hebrew name, and Binyamin Zev was his German name.
That's why it's B.S. in English.
It's Wolf S. in English, it says here. Binyamin Zev, Wolf S. Jacobson. But that's the books we're talking about. Right, right, right. I used it in the rabbinate. I used it in the rabbinate, 100%. Now, Rivka Volpi published a memoir later in life. And you have to remember, people couldn't talk about it. All of you who are Holocaust survivors, second generation here, and here your family is Shanghai. I knew your father, I knew your uncle, I know the background. But people who went through the hell of the Holocaust basically couldn't talk about it for many reasons. It brought back nightmares. Secondly, there was an attitude. They wanted their children to grow up normally. They did not want their children to suffer who the parents were. There's an amazing movie. I've quoted it to you before. It won prizes. It's about 20 years ago. It's on, I'm told it's on YouTube. An amazing movie. I have a copy of the original, but it's a video. It's A People Apart, I think it's called. It's about Borough Park. It's by a YU graduate about Borough Park. And he really goes into the heart of Borough Park and the people and the education. A very wonderful movie, very insightful. For me, a little bit torturous because of the girl from the Belzer home who rebels. She wants to have literature. Go to Stern College. Why do you throw the baby away with the bathwater? You want to be broad? Go to Stern College. You get every literature course in the world and have Torah Hashem Tamima. It's like we spoke about yesterday with the two great-grandchildren of the Sakhmurov that we spoke about yesterday. One is in the army with a kippah and one without a kippah. The one without a kippah breaks the heart. You threw away the apikursus of your grandfather, but you also threw away Yiddishkeit. We can have both, Baruch Hashem. So in that movie, she interviews people in the stores. And I spent 20 summers in Borough Park. So I know Borough Park, and I know the story, I know the lady, and this lady, second generation, right? Ladov, like your age. So this lady, she's interviewed, she said, I'm always amazed how my children could say no to me. She said, when we grew up, we never said no to our parents because we knew what they went through. It's a deep thought, think about it. And people didn't talk. Then, memoir literature started to come out. Towards the end of Rabbi Wolpe's life, people pressed his wife to write a memoir. Rav Avram Dushinsky's daughter, she finally wrote a memoir. He wrote a foreword to it. It's a wonderful volume, Faith in the Night, Emunat Techam B'Leilot. Now, I have a feeling it was written originally in Hebrew. I don't think she wrote it in English. and it was translated. The English is not the greatest. When I read it, I feel like I would like to edit it and make it a little better, but it's a fabulous, fabulous volume. And here I want to quote from the volume, and she first, I'm going to tell her story, and then she has all the girls who studied at the institution that was organized, she has all these girls write their own memoir, and I'll quote some of them, and it's overwhelming. I'm not only quoting a small part. I'm beginning on page 135. We'll get there in a second. She describes, this snail is Rivka Wolpe, Rivka Krzyzewski Wolpe. And she describes how they're now saved, and the Red Cross and everyone is stepping in, and the Scandinavian countries are offering to do their part. And she's boarding the ship for Sweden. And it's just what she writes here. This paragraph alone says so much. Here, they survived the Holocaust. They went through hell. They're lucky to be alive. So after they were liberated, they managed to acquire a few possessions that were very dear to them, maybe a book, something, a fancy scarf. And as they're being taken to Sweden, they're worried stiff that these people have diseases, that everything is diseased, that everything has germs, and wary of disease and infection. The Swedes didn't understand our language. We don't understand theirs. With a cheerful smile, they confiscated everything. Okay? In other words, they reached Sweden, they had nothing. They had to start from scratch. Then they reached Sweden, and again, they're being placed in a camp with a fence around it. Another barbed wire fence. But we were led into a large hall, originally a gymnasium, which was lined with double-decker beds. Our beds were clean, white paper sheets. Sweden is blessed with many forests and a well-developed paper industry. We were able to change our sheets and towels every day. For us, this was undreamed of luxury. How good it was to feel clean and fresh after years without sheets or decent beds or towels. And this speaks for itself. Can you imagine what you went through? And suddenly now, sheets made out of paper. I haven't seen this. Anyone been to Sweden? Paper? It must be a whole industry there. I don't know today, but all right, we have sheets. I know my wife, every week, every 2 weeks, there's a big deal in the house. I have to help her turn over the mattress and the sheets. I'm a man. I leave it a month. What do you have to do every 2 weeks? But all right, those are the kind of inhara. Now, and then she describes, Sweden, and the medicine, and they're giving them medical tests. They want to be sure that there won't be epidemics, and everything is wonderful, good food, rest, and you can imagine the food is not kosher, obviously. And then you start to think, who am I? What am I? How did I survive? And what's my future? Where will I go? What will happen? And now they take them out of this barbed wire area. They're healthy, they're well. They go to a more beautiful location. And every week they're given money. They're given an allowance. And she says she hadn't held money in her hands for years. And the first thing she did, she saved up money to buy material to sew a Shabbos dress. All right, this speaks, talks to us. Now, the Swedes encouraged us to search for our relatives in other countries. Now, imagine you're a 10-year-old girl, a 12-year-old girl, a 15-year-old girl. Who could recall the addresses of relatives abroad. All right? No, they figured every Jew from East Europe must have some relatives in New York, some relatives in England. How do you recall the addresses? I know we're right now in my family, my father's generation, only one person has left alive, Shoshana Goshek, and she's not well. She's in her 90s. She's quite ill. And she's trying desperately to figure out the letters from her father. That's my great uncle. I write about him in Washington. He was a sheikhet, a Talmud Chacham. He learned in the Lashon yet. And we have letters from Europe. And after World War II, we never heard from anyone in our family that was left behind. And we knew addresses, but no one was there. But imagine the other side of the coin. Who can she write to? Who can she contact? And the Swedes were right. They didn't want this to go on indefinitely. They took these girls in. They're spending the thousands of dollars. They're doing what a good Christian believes in doing. Those Sapma ladies who converted, God have mercy, a few weeks ago, what we saw on the internet. Of course, the smartest comment was, halavai, they would have been raised in Chabad. Chabad teaches love for every Jew. Instead, they were raised with hatred, and they go to a religion that teaches love for every human being. All right, they were good Christians. Fine. Very sad. Look for your relatives. So this poor girl. So some of the girls, once in a while, there was a girl who was older, who had a memory, who knew who to contact, and a letter would come in. Occasionally, there'd be a reunion. They would be sent for. One day, when they are delivering the mail, the name Rivka Grzynski is called out. A letter arrives. Who's writing to me? Now, she knew right away it couldn't be from the States, because there was no way letters could come through. It was right after the war. Boats weren't traveling yet. There were minefields that had to be cleared. Few planes were flying, and those were flying were military planes that didn't carry non-military mail. And she looks at the letter. It's the envelope with the return address of the Var Hatzala in Stockholm. Remember I told you there was a big Var Hatzala that functioned out of Sweden. For Sweden, you could reach into the German areas. It was an independent area. They weren't at war. They were neutral. And from the Var Hatzala, she can't believe her eyes. She opens the letter, and then she gets the story. Remember I told you, list was starting to circulate. So it's not like today. The computer, when you see the computer, kiss it. Because the computer has done so much for Torah, it's beyond words. What you have on the computer. So today, God forbid, if this would be 1945 and we had computers, you would have a list. Remember I told you in our work, I don't think Yitzchak ever saw this, but I already was in the inner sanctuary. So I told you I would disappear from Jerusalem, and as far as I was teaching every day, I was a young man teaching in many different schools. I had 10 times the energy I have today. And I'm in the army. It's true, I was in the army. I was in Tel Aviv in the Matek Klali giving a lecture. Everything was arranged with the army. Then I would have a nice lunch. The secretaries were all Eidot HaMizrach at the time. Their love for Rabbanim was indescribable. We have a lot to learn. Dov, we have a lot to learn from the Eidot HaMizrach. You're an Ashkenaz, I'm Ashkenaz. We lost it. Our people lost it. They, even without a kippah, retained the basics. You follow what I'm saying? So then I would go across the street. It's no longer standing. It's part of Sarona. All you see is a sign, Albert Mendler Street. I'm trying to have them put up a plaque there. Albert Mendler Street, 23. Three levels of security I had to go through. What the final level was a computer. Remember what I told you what a computer was in 1980? One of the few computers, I think there were 5, 6, it's a whole wall with flashing lights. It had the name of every refusnik in Israel, anyone who requested a visa. Remember I told you, and the same thing, let's say a guy named Hexter, living in Kiev, wants to get out. They would check with Rishmat HaPnim. Oh, we have a Hexter here in Rehovot. Without your knowledge, they would send the whole thing that's your brother. You follow? And the Russians had to agree, because according to their law, repatriation of families was permissible. I mean, had to agree. At least it gave a basis to start the process. In 45, you didn't have lists. You had this list and that list and a third list. The Red Cross had a list from Stockholm, from the Dvar HaTzala, and someone saw the name Rivka Gazhensky. So you see, if Rakefit gets lost after World War II, no one's going to recognize the name. But imagine if your name is Feinstein, if your name is Soloveitchik. Ah, so they wrote to her, wow, are you the daughter of Rav Avraham Grzynski? And she said, yes. So the head of the Dvar HaTzala in Stockholm, Rabbi Jacobson, Rabbi Yonaman Zev, he got in touch with her. And he told her, we're opening a school for girls, for survivors, in a suburb of Stockholm. Now I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. Lidinga. Why am I asking? The O has two dots. And what's that called? An umlaut? I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, because I don't know what the two dots on top. And I have very brilliant people sitting in front of me, but on this level, you're as stupid as I am. an umlaut. Yeah, but how does that affect the pronunciation? That's what I want to know. In other words, L-I-D-I-N-G-O, Lindingo. And wow, he's opening a school, and she right away agrees to go and be part of the school. Now, her older sister survived. Anyone here from Chicago will appreciate this. And she moved to Eretz Yisrael before the Holocaust. And she was married to one of the great Eluim of the Litvisha Yeshiva Welt, Reb Chaim Krizworth. Make believe you heard the name, so the ignorant pass for the wise. Reb Chaim Krizworth, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Hebrew Theological College, what you call Skokie today, in Chicago. Later, the chief rabbi of Antwerp. And his final years, came back to Israel, was here in Harnof. He was a Gaon Adir with a photographic memory. And Rakefet can tell you about a run-in with him that was unbelievable, one of the interesting moments in my life. A Talmud in the Kollel, who today lives in Baltimore, his family lives here, they had common aliyah, but he never really integrated here. And he's in Baltimore today, and he's probably listening to the Shia. So I had his Sheva Brachas, I remember it was Hanukkah, Sheva Brachas, and I spoke at the Sheva Brachas. And I spoke all right. I think I know how to speak a little bit with the Divrei Torah. And I ended off. I remember what I said. Even I get not for now. And at the end, they ended off. And you have to go on and master Shas and Paiskin. And Rabbi Krizworth wandered in, and they said, Rabbi Krizworth is there. He spoke after me, and he got up and ripped the heck out of me. Who is this young man? What the heck does he know about Shasim Paiskim? And he ripped me, didn't know me from a hole in the ground, but the chutzpah, a guy without a beard, without pace, without the pinnacle dress, a guy, Rimani Shalalam, who is he, what is he, and well, what he did, it was unbelievable. That was, and this Sheva Brachas was Friday morning, Friday midday. Saturday night, Nebuch the Chatan and his father came to my house to apologize, and I'll tell you what yours truly said to them. Oh, if only you had recorded it. My students would have enjoyed it immensely. We could have made this tape available for Tztucker. We could have raised thousands of dollars for Shvutami. Oh, they... Well, anyway, be it as it may, this was my run-in with Rabbi Krizworth. All right, so
did you ever find out that you knew something?
No, I didn't even replenish a lie. I've met enough people in my life to understand what goes on in graduate school. Do you recall how one professor would maledict the other professor? I can tell you stories of what went on. And all right, that's life. Take it with a grain of salt. But I deserved it. I should have walked in. I should have borrowed a beard and chayas and a bekesha. I should have walked in properly with a shtekin, with a cane. There's a way to do it. All right, Baruch Hashem, I am who I am, and I don't have to apologize. Be it as it may, that's Rabbi Crisworth. He was a Gaon Adir. He was a Gaon Adir. You should know that. You've recognized the name? That's right. Mekas HaTorah and Talpiot. He was one of the founders. He was he was known as Rosh Yeshiva, although he only gave shir when he visited Israel. He's basically an Antwerp, but he was one of the founders. Then she found out through her sister in Israel that her sister Leah, who was hidden by a nun, was alive. And that's like, you got to ask Herbie Maltz's story. Hidden by a nun, hidden by Goyim, Herbie Maltz's story. And she was in Italy on the way to Israel, Aliyah Bet. And in Italy, she explains, you know, what Aliyah Bet was, I'm sure you all know. The British, we have a big score to settle with the British Empire, and the Arabs are settling it for us today. The revenge that they're taking in Britain and France, they're doing a good job. So the only way you could get to Israel was the illegal Aliyah, Aliyah Bet. And there too, there's a lot of memoir literature written today, Aliyah Bet. And Shaul Avigur, he became famous. He's the one I told you that ran Aliyah Bet, and he later runs the whole division that dealt with the Jews in Russia, the Nativ. And believe it or not, in Italy, waiting to be placed on the boat that would go in to Haifa, etc., she's walking on the street, and she sees a young kid. She thinks for a minute, gee, this may be our younger brother. She wasn't sure it was him because we had all changed so much during the long and terrible war. Besides, the torn and ragged clothing he was wearing made him look like a beggar, not the brother she remembered. They both stopped and looked at each other carefully. Until that moment, neither had known that the other was alive. The moment when they recognized each other was one of indescribable joy and exhilaration for both of them. They both made Aliyah soon afterward and settled in Eretz Yisrael. And you can multiply this by tens of thousands of incidents. But one sister already in Israel, a second sister on the way, a brother, and while she's in the new school, she's called out, and a immigration certificate with her correct name has arrived. And obviously, well known, Brzezinski, people intervened with the Jewish agency. They are good at Yisrael quota, and there were quotas. You know what happened. The agency, in accordance with the strength of the various political parties, so 5%, let's say, went to Agudat Yisrael, and they put her name, and she winds up in Israel at a very early stage. However, excuse me, what follows are the girls who tell the story of the Lindingo girls. These girls comprise the student body of Lindingo. In the following accounts, former students describe the school and the healing process they underwent there. And Rivka signs off here, and the girls pick up. Now, I want to mention, if anyone's listening and looking for a doctorate, this would make a fabulous doctorate in both either discipline of Jewish history or sociology. In other words, here you have names. Now, I don't know how many people are alive. It could be that all these names that we're going to quote maybe very few are alive, because remember, they would have to be my age or older, and what they went through. But let's hope maybe the majority are alive. But nevertheless, it would be very interesting to trace as many students, what happened later. Some wind up in Israel, some wind up in America. It would be a fascinating sociological study with historic implications. All right, this is a girl named P. Bolak, whatever the P stands for, Penina Bolak. Bolak, by the way, is a well-known Swiss name. There, I taught Bolaks, and I don't know if they're originally Swiss, they may originally be German, but do you recognize the name? Do you, they may have survived in Switzerland, but I taught Bolaks in the years that I was teaching on a collegiate level. And she describes, we arrived in Sweden in stretchers, having come directly from hospitals in the newly liberated countries. And she describes how they're transferred to the largest camp with medical facilities, Doverstorf, for war refugees in Sweden. And the Swedes are very nice. And she says, we didn't remember much from our homes, only a few mitzvot that we had seen our families observe in the ghetto conditions. In other words, how much did they remember? How much did they see? These girls were, let's say, for the sake of argument, that when the war broke out, 5 years old, 6 years old. And sadly, there was no kosher food in Doverstorf. And when she first arrives, a few weeks later, Harav Shlomo Wolpe comes to visit the camp. And he brings his food with him. And he asks the girls, where can one wash for chamotzi? And the girls say, we burst into tears. It is difficult to describe our emotions at that moment. This was the first time after so many years we heard mention of a mitzvah. Throughout the war years, it was forbidden to utter a word that may have alluded to Torah and mitzvah observance. And then a home was established for us in Lidingo. And she becomes a student there. She describes what she went through. And when the war was over, she weighed only 18 kilograms, 40 pounds. I was literally skin and bones. I didn't believe that I would ever be able to walk again. My physical condition improved from day to day, but the feeling that I was alone in the world gnawed at my heart. I was the only one of my family who had survived. Who would care for us? Then a great miracle occurred, and the founders of the school in Lindingo visited us in the hospital. They were like angels from heaven. They helped and cared for us, supported and nurtured us, like an angel who strikes a plant and says, grow. They tapped us and said, you shall live. And I mean, this is what it's all about. Not everyone was able to pull out of it. But I would say 90%, Baruch Hashem, this is Reb Lezer Silver. Remember, he's giving money on condition you remarry. Some girls were so ill that the doctors were sure they would soon die. I recall that Rav Jacobson visited one critically ill girl in the hospital. After seeing her, he asked the staff if he could leave the hospital and return later with a gift that would cheer her up. I don't know if she'll still be alive when you return, a nurse replied. And there is no doubt that the prayers of those guardian angels who are helping us were heard, and a miracle occurred. That girl, young girl, recovered, and in time was privileged to build a fine family. And here, these are the miracles. Who knows today, out of that girl who was so near death, there are 500 direct descendants today. Make the chishuv. She marries 6, 7 children, Haredi people. grandchildren and the success. Beautiful. As a result of the dedication and concern showered upon us, our auspicious attitude towards everyone began to dissipate. And you have to understand, when you go through World War II, you go through the camps, you don't trust anyone. This was like Jews who came in Aliyah from Russia during the communist era. It took a long time for them to learn that their phone was not tapped. I can tell you my own experiences with these people. They were convinced that the government was tapping their phones. They had no idea. I can remember when the Fradkin family got out, and I had published papers, maybe it appears in Washington, I believe, trying to help them get out, create publicity. So when they got out, they asked me, who asked you in the government to do this? Now, they couldn't conceive that a private individual would go to try to get people out. They asked me, who in the government? It takes a long time to adjust. Now, what she says here, this is unbelievable. They were fearful. In the beginning, we were even afraid of Rebbetzin Jacobson, who spoke German. Nevertheless, with her fervent soul and the love she dispensed among us, she gained our confidence and trust very quickly. And she describes how education, the Rebbetzin, they started teaching them the alphabet from there to the Siddur, to the Chumash, to Rashi, Nevi'im, to Tehillim. We thirsted for spiritual and had absolutely no interest in material things. Our experience in Auschwitz, when we had nothing, not even personal belongings, taught us the meaninglessness of materialism. In Vendingo, we were inculcated with the ideal that only the soul's acquisitions are eternal, and they are the only things over which others have no control. Tell me. I don't know. I check it out. I don't know. But tell me what I just read to you. What does that remind you of? Anatoly Sharansky. Fear no evil. In jail. They could take away everything. They couldn't take away our minds, our heart, our dedication. It's just unbelievable. And this girl goes on and on. Now watch this paragraph. I'm on page 156. Now I highly advise, try to get the book. By the way, the book is downstairs in the Torah Shraga section of contemporary literature. I didn't know how to show gratitude to Hashem for having saved me from the 49 gates of impurity. Therefore, I resolved to fast on Mondays and Thursdays. It was some time before the Rebbetzin realized that I wasn't coming down to meals on those days. When she learned the reason, she didn't permit me to continue fasting. At her initiative, three rabbis came from Stockholm, Rabbis Zuba, Chazdan, and Wolpe, in order to annul my vow. And you see here too, how do you approach God? And asceticism is not within the mainstream. I don't have to tell you, the Mesilat Yesharim is a very famous volume, but there is a criticism of the Mesilat Yesharim that it has an aesthetic overtone. And into a certain way, this brings us back to Hasidus versus the Litvische Welt. Morty, you're a Litvak. You fast on your, when you have your outside, you fast. Morty fast, the rough fast. I'm already a bad example. I just had yahrzeit for my mother, Vav Shvat. Friday, I made a siyum in shul. I'm sechet moed katan. I have a few siyumim piled up. They'll need me again, Erev Pesach. And all right, I made a siyum, a good litvak. And then I gave a whole l'chaim. Everyone made a l'chaim. Zol neshama haben an aliyah. Ali Yidna Alakranka Arafua, Ali Yidna Yeshua, it's a beautiful thing. But you see, these girls suffered so much and she wants to fast Monday, Thursday, they called in a basin to be Matir Neda. And then another problem she raises, and here this is a problem, thank God we don't have this problem today, but this is taking us back to the early years of the state. So they have to get out. Everyone is in Sweden, it's a holding operation. Within a year, within 2 to 3 years, the entire school dissipated. Most had come in Aliyah. With the declaration of the State of Israel, the gates are open, everyone can come in Aliyah. Some went on to America, they had relatives. No, here you're coming to Israel. Here are girls you took out of the Gehenna. These are girls you were Meisa Nefesh to educate. These are people, the Jacobsons and Rabbi Wolpe, who called this the most beautiful years of his life. They were Meisa Nefesh. And here you're taking them to Israel, the Israel in total rebellion against religion, Ben-Gurion, Weizmann, any name you want to get right. Ben-Zvi was a Shomer Shabbos, you should know. He was a little different than the rest. He was a Shomer Shabbos. But here the leaders taking the payas off the kids, robbing Yemenite children, what's coming out now, which will shake the world when all the papers are published and all the documents revealed, and you're taking them, what will be with these girls? And where did they arrive in Israel? They arrive in Haifa. That's the starting point of Israel at that time. Even today, when we arrived 50 years ago, where did we arrive? We arrived in Haifa. All right, how religious was Haifa? How religious was, even you forget about the Tel Aviv, how religious was Yerushalayim? The schools were totally non-successful. You know what happened to a guy named Rakefet? I was once speaking in a hotel here, big crowd, hundreds of people, and I'm talking about some part, facet of Israeli history, and I mentioned that the early, late 40s, early 50s, the Zionist dream, the socialist Zionist dream, the new world, the new tomorrow, the new people, everything they spoke about, the new type of Jew, quoting Ben-Gurion now, and kids who received the finest religious education were swept away. And I mentioned the Eitz Chaim. You were lucky if 20% of the class remained from. And a Jew with a bekesher and a beard from South Florida gets up in his accented English. Found out later, Halavai, we had some of his money for Shvutami Yomo. You hear what I'm saying? Very successful in real estate. He gets up and says, Rabbi Rakefet, with all due respect, you are not correct. I am a graduate of the 1958 Chaim class, 120 graduates. I'm the only one who remained to Shomer Shabbos. And he listed out all the generals that went to school with him. They all came from Eitz Chaim. No, you're taking these girls after what they went through and you're bringing them to Israel. What will be with them? The Rebbetzin was very worried about our making Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael because of the secular environment that prevailed there at that time. When we finally immigrated, she went with Rav Volbe to the Chazon Ish to discuss her concerns with him. And they're quoting her. The girls have reached marriageable age. They are in Haifa. What will come of all my efforts? She asked. Each one will build their home in her own place, the Chazon Ish replied. And so it was. The blessing of the Tzaddik was fulfilled. And you see, I don't know if all, but the overwhelming majority remained totally committed to Torah Hashem Tamina. And she describes how many of them lived in Yerushalayim. The Jacobsons lived in the Sanhedrin neighborhood of Yerushalayim, and they remained in touch with all these girls the rest of their lives. If anyone was ill, the Rebbetzin would immediately leave her home in the Sanhedrin neighborhood of Yerushalayim and travel across town to visit and encourage her student. We Lindingo students raised our children without the help of mothers, sisters, or Beis Yaakov volunteers. under difficult financial situations. And that's something any survivor of the Holocaust, I can tell you myself, I went to school, many of my classmates had no aunts, no uncles, certainly no grandparents. It was an absolute different world. And by the way, this comes out in the documentary about Borough Park, that today people said in the 80s, the 90s, could you imagine my children have grandparents, have aunts, have uncles, have cousins? For so many survivors, this was unheard of. And that's exactly what this girl says. Yet the Rebbetzin always told us during every trial, one must search for the beautiful part, and then the difficulty will subside. This advice coming from this illustrious person who was like a loving mother to us, helped us overcome the difficulties and continue along the path she had charted for us. In all areas, Rebbetzin Jacobson consulted Rabbi Wolpe. Rabbi Wolpe was looked up to. He was a mirror. He was a Litvisher. The German Rabbanim deferred to him. And who advised her how to behave towards us. And each and every one of us. Through her, he instilled in us an education focused on unity. Indeed, the harmony between us developed into a remarkable manner. If one girl had a nice dress, she would loan it without any reservations to a friend who had to go into town. It was that way with everything, shoes, gloves, scarves, whatever belonged to us, belonged to everyone. And she goes on and on, describing the chesed, what these girls did later in life, how they helped others. The chinuch and unity and dedication is the proud heritage of Lindingo. Ah, beautiful. Let me go one step further. This is a memoir from Itza Vera. Itza, I-T-Z-A. I don't know what type of first name that is. Vera's the last name, V-E-R-A, Itza. Can anyone figure out, is that a Hungarian name? Itza. For a boy, it would be Yitzchak, but for a girl, Itza. All right, listen to this. She describes the Red Cross, then the government of Sweden, to accept some of the Muslimen. The Muslimen, it's the German word they used for skeletons. What does it mean, Muslimen? What, a muscle? Just muscles? I don't know what it means exactly. But it means walking skeletons.
It's people that are
really people.
Emotionally not alive, and yet
they're... Yeah, but what does the name mean in German, Muslimen? We know what it means. I'm just curious what the shorish is. Okay, and... they took us, and there was a lot of kindness, and the nurses were merciful and generous. They tried to make us happy and take us on trips, which included visits to their churches. Slowly we began to realize that we had emerged from the mortal danger that still hovered over us for so long. And that's what I referred to a few minutes ago. When you left Russia, it took you a long time to stop looking over your shoulder. Listen to what I'm about to read. Nonetheless, we still saved an extra slice of bread under our pillows after breakfast, just in case we wouldn't receive lunch. The nurses who made our beds didn't understand us. Bread in bed? Why? I want to tell you, this paragraph is unbelievable. Who recalls a very wealthy lady who played a big share in developing Jerusalem and the Jerusalem Theater? When she died, there were big obituaries about her. And one of the stories she told, they told about her, she never left her house without a sandwich in her pocketbook. And remember this? And this was a lady who sat, her husband and millions and millions of dollars, when $1 million was still $1 million. Not today. Today, as I told you, every third Jew in Jerusalem is a millionaire. It goes without saying. You know, figure out your apartment and your pension fund. My Punish your life. Why? She was a survivor. And the papers explain she could never make peace with the thought that she has nothing to worry about. And I want to tell you, Eti, Bididi Haviyavda, with my own eyes and ears, let me tell you a story. I'm going to mention the name. I had a very dear student in the early 70s. I remain very close to him until today. A very skilled medical doctor, Dr. Shragai Kaslow or Phil Kaslow, I don't know, whatever name you know. You know him from Teaneck, right? Shragai's parents were real Lithuanians from the Vilna area. His father yet knew Rav Chaim Moisa Grishinsky's father, Rav Shlomo David Grishinsky, who was the Rav of Ivya. Ivya was a suburb of Vilna. Rav Moshe Shatskis was Rav in Ivya. And they survived. They were with the partisans, the forest, with miracles. They survived. And Shragai is second generation. His mother should live and be well. She should live 120. She is still alive. No youngster, but Baruch Hashem. So Shragai had a sister, two children. They both got married. They were out of the house. His sister was married at the time. He wasn't married. They got married a little later. But he was in New York in medical school, and he was practicing already. He's affiliated with the big hospital in Washington Heights, world famous hospital. What's it called? Anyone can help
Columbia
me?
Columbia Presbyterian,
exactly. Columbia Presbyterian Hospital. And he comes home for Shabbos, and we're there for Shabbos. And he opens the refrigerator. And it's filled. And he says to his mother, "Mom, I don't understand you. I'm not home. Your daughter's not home. Gloria, your daughter. What do you need all this food for? You're still shopping as if the whole house, it's just you and Papa. What do you need all this food?" And his mother looks at me and says, "Rabbi, Rabbi, man zun fashteit minish. My son, he can sign the greatest doctor, but Hafnish can seichel. He can be the greatest doctor. He doesn't have seichel. I went through the hell of the Holocaust. I have to keep my refrigerator full. Thank God we have food. I can afford." He doesn't understand. When I open the refrigerator, I have to see that it's full. This paragraph, unbelievable. Could you imagine? They went to sleep. It took a long time till they learned they have nothing to worry about. They'll have bread for lunch and bread for supper, and you don't have to keep it under your pillow. And then she describes how in the hospital, in this rehabilitation center, a man appears with a beard. The name, David Gross. He was the first Jew we had seen since the terrible Holocaust. He too was a survivor. And he came to tell the girls he bore good tidings. Recently, a Beishakov school where the dormitory has been established near the town of Lindingo for girls like you. And she's accepted in the school, and she describes how she's taking the train to Stockholm, going on a train. She's told there'll be a girl waiting to meet her. She comes to the station. "I finally spotted the Jewish girl. It was obvious from her face, the way she wore her hair, and her general appearance that she was Jewish. A moment later, she ran over to me. 'Are you the girl who has come to join Rav Jacobson's school?' 'Yes,' I replied." And she said, "Good. Let me take you to the Rav. Meet him in Stockholm before we go on to the school." They reach his apartment, and my escort knocks on the door. "Arein!" "Come in," in German. A voice replies. We enter the room with sacred tomes. seated at a desk with the Rav, who greeted us with a heartwarming smile and uplifting words. I looked around at the bookcases and felt something hard to express in words. Unbidden, the words left my mouth. Hoi! Azas farm shank azevi in the heim. Oh, a bookcase filled with svarim, just like I had in my home. This reaction must surely be baffling to the reader, but I haven't seen a Jew or a sefer or been in a Jewish home for many years. And this girl goes on, and she describes what Rabbi Jacobson did for her, what Rav Volpe did for her. There's no way you can imagine it unless you've gone through the hell of the Holocaust. And these people literally, Tchiyat HaMesim, resuscitated them. Can these dry bones live? The vision of Yecheskel. And I'll continue. I'm not finished yet. I have more. There's more insight here that has to be stressed. But you see, this was the Bar Hatzalah. By the way, the contact person from the Bar Hatzalah was a name I mentioned in passing, Rabbi Pinchas Vogelenta. Reb Lazer Silva never was in Sweden, but when Rav Pinchas Vogelenta spent so many months in Europe, one of the places that he visited and that he had input and helped get support for was Lindingo, was this school. And this Rabbi Pinchas Vogelenta, that is a grandfather or a great-grandfather or a great-uncle of all the wonderful Vogelenters who make up the Torah people today. He and his brother were the ones who placed them on the map in the Western Hemisphere. As I mentioned to you, his brother later came in Aliyah, and his brother became the secretary of the chief rabbinate, secretary to Rav Herzog, and afterwards to Rav Unterman, and one of the prime movers, and it's his daughter that you all know, Tamar Ross, Professor Tamar Ross. She's a very interesting individual, very learned, and a big feminist, some controversial theories, very fascinating. And the son, her brother, Wanda Panovich, just the normal roll of the dice of the literature world, I'll put it. And I'll end off with a very unique experience there. It, as far as I know, it's the only time it ever happened to me. When I was teaching in Mechlala, Ravi Tamar Vogelenta got in touch with me, such a chashuv rav, and I'm a young kid, and he heard about my shiurim, and he wanted to sit in my classes, sit in the class, come to Mechlala, hear, see, and he came. Mori, do you know why he really came? Because they proposed the shidduch for a son with the daughter of Kalman Kahana. And Tova Kahana was my student in Mechlala. And the class he chose to sit on was the class that she was a postgraduate, an advanced class. She was a student. And he sat on and he observed Rakefet teaching. But I think, Charlie, more important, he observed the young lady who would soon become his daughter-in-law, La'richit Yamim Tovim. So to reiterate, all right, we lived a little bit of Torah history, a little bit of our history. It's very emotional. I can't say we've hit the Menucha yet. It's been a very difficult week. I need not tell you what we paid the sacrifice, the children who are no longer with us. The baby of 3 days, I mean, overwhelming. The couple, what strength. You want to see from people, that's where you see it. And the soldiers that were killed, the one from Beit Shemesh, that's your area, seems the father is very, very well known. in outreach circles. He was a pilot in the IDF. And the long beard, the Breslover look, I'm sure your daughter Devorah has to know who we're talking about. And his speech, and the boy from Ashkelon, and Nebuch the kid who was critically ill, doesn't look like a Halavai should make it, let me put it that way. And all that's gone with it, and our politicians, and the inner Machlokes, and our Barak, and Tzipi Livni, and what all I can tell you is, at times I want to write on the wall, Kahana Tzadak, you understand? Don't agree with everything, but a great deal. And why doesn't anyone believe in the Bible anymore? Why doesn't someone quote the Chumash? Why doesn't someone say, this is our land? Our whole government, I tried very hard 20 years ago, I had contact some important people that are no longer alive, and they got back to me with the answer, they don't want to turn it into a religious war. Idiots! What is it if not a religious war? What are we talking about? We don't belong here. Go back to Europe. You hear what they're saying to us. So what would be wrong if we quoted the Bible and said this is our land? Let the English and the French, let their prime minister say publicly, they don't believe in the Bible. Okay, say it publicly. We'll know where we stand. But to quote the Bible, the Devar Hashem. All right, Kol Korei B'Rabam, preaching to the choir, as they say. By the way, my own grandchildren took the soldier's death very hard, because I had 5 grandchildren who served in Nachal Haredi. That was their unit, Netzach Yehuda. So all this that happened, Netzach Yehuda, it's not just the army, but it's their very own unit that they were in. To reiterate, all right, it's been a week of teaching on Imodel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, yesterday's shiur, and today's lecture, as hard as it was to give, but I hope I've given information. Next week, what did we do today? We did Lindingo, we did a little bit of one story of Vat Hatzala. Next week we'll complete it, and then we open up Orthodoxy after World War II, replaces Silva. Jack, $99,000 linked to the shekel to the IOU list for those lectures. You buy it, yes or no? Confidence in the Rebbe? So, Baruch Hashem. Eti will co-sign with you. It's okay. Don't worry. Sunday Be'ezrat Hashem is a very important lecture, because everything I said till now, Bavav dances to a different tune, as you will see. And then I will take and show you the one development where we solve a halachic problem that was insoluble. And today we have a solution thanks to modern technology. And even Reb Menashe Klein will agree. After that, we begin, take us quite a while, was Yitz Rubin allowed to volunteer to serve as a chaplain in the American Army? Okay? Reb Menashe Klein, and ultimately reach Moriah Rebbe, Reb Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik. A lot of freebies, bear with me. The latest tradition, the most interesting article is on how to make tea, coffee, and if you're allowed to make powdered soup on Shabbos. Rabbi Bleich. Here we are. What happened here? What happened here is unbelievable. With my handwriting here, this is okay. What happened here is very simple. This is all on one topic. Rabbi Zev Lef was caught at the soccer game in Scotland learning Gemara. What's happened to him? Here's a tshuva I showed you. I got more copies of it. Showing that were you allowed to go to the soccer game? That's one part of it. But then my student, Rabbi Yeshua Grinstein, takes him to task. You're not a good father. You go to a soccer game, and instead of being with your children, you open a Gemara and you learn Rabbi Shalalem. And he quotes a story, maybe it's for Baron Lichtenstein, that there was some wedding in the Gush, And someone comes to the wedding, and he's sitting at the chasan's table, and everyone is singing and dancing, and he opens it. This guy is sitting and learning Gemara. And this Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Grinshin doesn't give me a name. Maybe it's Rabbarin Littles. He says to him, you don't have to be here. In other words, if you're coming, be mesameh chatan v'kala, but don't sit at the chasan's table with an open Gemara. All right, I want to tell you, Rakefet wrote a letter to Rabbi Grinshin. The letter is here. And I told him he's come down too hard on Rabbi Zevlev. He grew up in South Florida. Whitey Hurwitz made him from. It's a whole story with the day school in Miami Beach. What do you want out of him? If I went to a soccer game, I'd be bored out of my wits. What I want to see, what we spoke about yesterday at the end of class, after class, next May, I want to organize a group. We're going to go to London. By the way, all the tickets, Charlie, all the tickets are sold out already. You only can get on a waiting list now. What did I tell you yesterday? How much was the ticket? $400+ for a good seat. Two games. Boston is hosting the Yankees in London. They've turned in a big soccer field to a stadium. It's a baseball stadium. It's going to be unbelievable. If Rakefet goes there and he's holding a Gemara, then you can criticize him. But then I have a different problem. My grandchildren don't know what I'm talking about. What the heck is baseball? You understand? That's why I have to go. They'll take me to a soccer game. I'll be bored stiff. I'll take them there. They'll be bored stiff. You can't win some Zankerson with baseball, but unbelievable for money what they will do to desecrate what baseball was all about. It's unbelievable. In London, they're playing a game of baseball. That's tarovet. That's sharpness. Basa v'chalo. Okay, if anyone's interested, from the archives, there was just a lecture given by a J.J. Schachter. It's Rebaran Kutla, 1935. And the whole issue, Yitzchak, do you know what it means? Tanakh begova einayim, if written to beret, modern Hebrew, Tanakh. When I taught the Michalala, I was shaking over this issue. Rabbi Riskin was stoned. Remember when he came from London to Manchester, they threw stones at him. By the way, literally, not figuratively. Why? Because he spoke about the Avot and criticized them. How are you view Tanakh? Are these the Avot, the greatest people that ever lived next to Moshe Rabbeinu, or are they just a little better than you and me? And this is from the archives. This is about Aaron Kutler from Hapades visiting in America in 1935, I believe it was. It mentions nothing, it's just welcoming him. But that's when he gave his shiur at YU. If anyone has a slightly Hasidic soul, I spoke about this many years ago in class. I got another copy. It's about the Lubavitcher Rebbe, his wedding night, and this Jew he meets, and meets the Jew again 20 years later, 30 years later, and what finally happens, what the Rebbe said to him. This is unbelievable. If after you read this, you might not become a Lubavitcher, but you got to have a little understanding of the Rebbe. One of a kind. Before Amazon was born, there was Chabad organization. Chabad.org. And here, this is the original Chabad setup, the room. Here they're broadcasting all over the world, telephones, computerization, at a very early stage. Mr. Elchanan Devor, the guidance he got from the Rebbe, very, very interesting. He's from Philadelphia. How many from Jews were in Philadelphia at that time? Next to none. He becomes a frum, a Baal Tshuva, and he's offered positions to teach in conservative temples and Orthodox shuls. And the Rebbe tells him, as long as they'll let you teach what you want, go to the conservative temple. You'll have more influence there. Boy, the Rebbe knew what Philadelphia was about. Fire burns in Cape Town. This is a shul I spoke in the year 2002 in Cape Town. The shul was destroyed by a major fire. Unbelievable. Not the arson, not anti-Semitic. Evidently something went wrong. The long goodbye, Kinder Transport, revisited 80 years later. This is a very moving article, what it was like. Imagine parents saying goodbye to kids and feeling they may never see them again, which is basically what happened. This is an interesting article. How many of you know Yiddish? Avu is the Hund Bagrabin. How do you translate that? Dov, can you handle that?
Avu is,
where is the dog hidden? I challenge you to read this article and then come back to me when you found the dog, and I'll try to explain it to you. Fascinating article. That Obama doesn't go to that Trump doesn't go to restaurants, and all he eats is fast food. And the restaurants in Washington are suffering. Read the article and find the dog. You'll find the dog. Avu is the Kunt Bagrabman, a Fohat Kelev Tamun. Okay? I don't know how to say it in English. CTEC, an Israeli company, has produced the first steak from artificial ingredients. Single cells. Is it fleshix? Is it parv? It is available. Very interesting article on religious girls joining the army. Look at that picture. Look at the skirts. And I have to tell you, we can't stop it. Rabbanim are fighting it, not fighting it. We've taken the woman out of the kitchen. She's not going to go back in. The women today all have degrees, all have professions. My wife goes crazy. All my children work. All my granddaughters work. My wife says a woman should be at home. She shouldn't leave the house. She should be there for the children. But the world has changed and left us behind. If Rakepet has taught women who are today heart surgeons, etc., etc., you can't stop the girls from going into the army. But look at that. That's a Kiddush Hashem. This is what I told you about the Nachal Haredi. A soldier's death brings grief to Israeli army's fervently religious battalion. All right, I don't know if Nachal Haredi is fervently religious, but interesting article. Orthodox Union, America's going crazy. They're shaking in T-neck. Latest on the kosher status of Arnold's and Entenmann's. And Rakefet had a lot of nachat. I think I told you when I heard the news that Entenmann's is losing its OU, my first reaction was, it will help Aliyah. And the joke in Jewish press, remember I gave it out 2 weeks ago, in Jewish press was the joke where Jack is saying to Etty, we can go in Aliyah. Entenmann's is no longer kosher. There it was. What about the Chinese Yosef Steinlin, how he became trim, the Rebbe's advice to him? This is unbelievable. All the pictures, if you like colored pictures, endless. Rubashkin celebrates 1 year of freedom. A Fabrenger, he became a Gaon at Tzaddik. As I know, he played games with banks. I don't know. That he got a sentence that was unfair, that's a different story. But all right, let's go along with the celebration. Rubashkin. This is for Charlie. Charlie, this is about a graduate of your yeshiva, your place, Kol Torah. Did you read this? You didn't read it. This is from Makor Rishon, a week ago. It's December 7th. All I can tell you is this article made me very proud, but I would not sell this individual life insurance. I'm sorry, I have a lot because we didn't have class for 2 weeks. If you know what's going on in America, war has been declared between the Haredi world and the Board of Education. And here's a story, Rav Yaakov Bender, I've taught members of his family, he's probably not going to be proud of it, that Rakefet YU got involved, but nevertheless, his grandfather was the biggest mishulach who saved yeshiva during the Depression. His picture appears in Revel in the book. He slams the New York Times after anti-yeshiva article. Here are copies of the Satmarur slamming the Board of Education. They have declared war on yeshiva. That the Hasidic yeshivas are not teaching English, math, are faking around and letting the kids come out of it total nincompoops as far as any general knowledge. And here is the an article. This is a statement of two Litvish Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbis Brudny and Reisman of Rosh Yeshiva of Mir and Torah Badas, and they've come out against the government. I have here, it begins, together the two of us have 70 years of experience in Jewish education. And Rakef had looked at it, I said to myself, big deal, I have 60 all alone, and after Shia, 70 years, 35, 35. If anyone wishes, this is Mizrahi trying to achieve all the people basically live here, but this is being given out all over the world, and I have to say, it's impressive. At least you know we're alive and kicking. And finally, if you haven't seen it, also from Makari Shon, a beautiful interview with the Haredi judge on New York's Supreme Court, Geret Hasida. She's visiting in Israel. Two of her children live in Israel. And boy, she is really something. A little dynamo. She's a small little woman, but what a dynamo. And she's proud, she says, she now understands that a judge on the Israeli Supreme Court is also Haredit. She's not Haredit, she's Dati Lu'umi Chadali Frum, head covered, Kedat V'Kedin, a granddaughter of Rav Ariel, Rav Yitzchak Ariel, a Gaon Adir, Talmud Mufak of Rav Avram Yitzchak, a Kohen Kuk. She's the daughter. Her late father and I taught together in Machon Gold in the 70s. He was a professor at Bar Ilan, Dr. Nachum Ariel. And this is, she speaks about her in this interview. I want to thank all my wonderful students for coming and honoring me with your presence, and until we meet again in health and happiness 1 week hence, Das Vidanya.
Yes, I can see a motion.